on Samach Dalet Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah, Koyin HaKorov Eitzel HaMizbeach V'chola, we said that you have the bowl of blood from the Korban is being passed from one Koyin to another. We said the Koyinim have to move a little bit as they're doing that in order to be accomplishing the mitzvah of Halacha. And eventually the Koyin at the head of the line, next to the Mizbeach, the Mishnah had said, Zorko Zrika Achas, he throws it against the side of the Mizbeach. So now we're going to discuss that point. Now, when you have like this, there's a korban chatas where the kohen dips his finger into it and daubs it on the corners of the mizbeach. You have most other korbanos which are shtayim shein arba, where the kohen takes the bowl and dashes from the blood of it to throws the blood out of it on the two opposite corners of the mizbeach. And then you have certain korbanos where you only need matana achas. We say every day in davening, habachor v'amaisa v'pesach. But there's two ways of understanding how that matana achas should be done. Is it that they're done the shficha, which means that you take the bowl and you pour it onto the wall of the mizbeach above the yisoid, or is it that you zorik it, which means that you do similar to what you do with shtayim shein arba, you're taking the bowl and you're throwing the blood out of it onto the mizbeach. So the Mishnah had used the word zrika. So is that in fact what it is? Man tana pesach bezrika. Which tana is it that says that the blood of the korban pesach has to be applied using zrika? Amar of chister Rabbi Yosi Aglili. That would be according to Rabbi Yosi Aglili. Whereas according to the other chachamim. Good morning, Avraham Moshe. Whereas according to the other chachamim, it would be b'shficha. It would be pouring it rather than throwing it. D'tanya, as we learn in a braisa, six lines from the bottom of Samach Dalet Amud Beis, Rabbi Yosi Aglili Omer. When the pasuk says about a bechor in Parshas Korach, it says as dam mam tizrek al mizbeach, their blood you shall throw on the mizbeach, ve'eschel bam taktir, and their chelev you should burn. Now, what's the them? Dam moy lo nemar. It doesn't say its blood, which would refer just to the bechor that it talked about. Ela dam mam. It says their blood, and similarly chel boy lo nemar ela chel bam. Therefore, Rabbi Yisak Lili says limit al bechoru meiser pesach. Therefore, what we learn from that is not only the bechor, but also meiser behema, and also the korban pesach. Where otherwise we don't have anything anywhere else in the Torah that says what's to be done with them. We know the Torah tells us elsewhere that a bechor has to be brought as a korban. Not a bechor. That ma'aser behema has to be brought as a korban, but it doesn't say what the procedure is to do with it. The korban pesach also. Okay, we have in Parshas Bo the procedure that was done in Mitzrayim where they put the blood on a mashka al shtei mezuzos, but it never says anywhere else in the Torah for all future generations what's supposed to be done with the blood and the emurim of the korban pesach. So now Rabbi Yosef Lili says, we're learning it from this pasuk over here, where it says about the bechor, as dam mam, and therefore it means not only the bechor, but also other korbanos that are otherwise unspecified, namely the maaser and the pesach. So therefore, it teaches about all of them, shein t'unin matan domim ve'emurin l'gabim mizbeach, that all of them, the blood has to be put on the mizbeach, and the emurim have to be burnt on the mizbeach. So Rabbi Yosi Aglili says, then if we're learning it all from the same pasuk, and it says as damim tizroik al mizbeach, you should throw the blood of them on the mizbeach. Then Rabbi Yosi Aglili says that means that all three of them is done bizrika. All three of them is you take the bowl and dash the blood against the side of the mizbeach, rather than taking the bowl and gently pouring the blood onto the side of the mizbeach. On the other hand, Rashi says that. We're going to learn at the end of the Masechta that we have Rabbi Shmuel, and actually we're going to say Rabbi Akiva there also, who learn what we do with the Korban Pesach from a different, and Meiser, from a different pasuk. They say that fine, Bechor is Bezrika, because it says as Domam Tizrik, but they say the plural over there, as Dom Mom and as Chel Bom, doesn't refer to different types of Korbanos, it just refers to different types of Bechor of cattle, Bechor of sheep, Bechor of goats. So they learn there's a different pasuk in Parashas Re'eh that says v'dams v'checha yishofech al mizbach Hashem alakecha, the blood of your korbanos should be poured on the mizbeach. So therefore they say that means that that's talking about the Pesach and the Maaser and the Pesach, that those have to be poured rather than thrown. So therefore our Mishnah, when it says thrown, would be only according to Rabbi Yosi Aglili. Continues the Gemara, Menolan Ta'unin Yesod. How do we know then that this Zrika, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, has to be done on a part of the Mizbeach above the Yesod? As we said yesterday, there is the Yesod surrounded the Mizbeach on two full sides, the north and the west, and then it stuck out a little bit towards the south and a little bit towards the east. So how do we know that the Zrika has to be done on one of the walls of the Mizbeach that's above the Yesod? We make a Xeda Shava on the word Zrika in connection with the Oila. Here it says you should throw the blood of them on the Mizbeach. And again, as we're saying, Rabbi Yossi Aglili says that that applies to all three, Bechor, Meiser, and Pesach. By the Korban Oila, it says that Bnei Aaron, the Kohenim, should throw its blood on them, around the Mizbeach, which means they do Shtei Matonas Shtei Naba, two on one corner, one on one corner and one on the opposite corner. So Ma Oila to Una Yesod, just like with the Oila, as we're going to see in a second, that has to be on a corner above the Yesod, Af Pesach Nami, Ton Yesod, the same thing is true of the Korban Pesach, which means by the Oila, what it means is, again, what we're saying is, the Shtei Matonas Shtei Naba is on opposite corners, caddy corner to each other of the Mizbeach. Now, one corner, the southeast corner, had no Yesod at all. Therefore, obviously, we're not throwing the blood of the Oila against that corner. Therefore, automatically, that cuts out the opposite corner, which would be the northwest corner. Therefore, that leaves us with the two corners where they would throw the blood against the Mizbeach are the southeast, the southwest corner and the northeast corner. South, northeast and southwest. Those would be the corner because each of those corners has Yesod over there. Because again, the Yesod goes along the whole north side and sticks out a little bit to the east. It sticks out one amma to the east, and it goes along the whole west side and sticks out one amma to the south. So therefore, when you do on those two corners, then you have Yesod over there. So therefore, we learn from this Gzeira Shava that the Korban Pesach, also the blood of it, has to be above the Yesod. Okay, v'oila gufa menolon. So the oila itself, where do we see it has to be above the Yesod? We said we're learning the Gzeira Shava, but where does it say by the oila itself that it has to be above the Yesod? The answer is amakra el Yesod mizbach ha'oila, because you have a different pasuk that mentions that the blood of a korban, a chatos, in that case, is supposed to be poured on the to the Yesod of the mizbeach of the oila. Which means Alma Oila Tuna Yesod. So you see from that pasuk, therefore, that the Oila has to be done. The blood of it has to be thrown onto the Mizbeach above a place that has a Yesod. Otherwise, it could have just said Oh Yesod on Mizbeach. Why does it have to say Mizbach Oila? So it teaches us that. So it teaches us. So it actually says, in effect, we read the pasuk El Yesod Mizbeach above the Yesod of the Mizbeach. Ha Oila is where the Oila should be. Is where the Oila's blood should be thrown. So therefore, we see the Oila requires to be above the Yesod, and therefore the Gzeira Shava tells us that the same thing is true of the Korban Pesach. It's interesting, when we say every day in davening, HaBechor V'HaMaisa V'HaPesach, and we put them all together, the Mishnah, the Gemara in Zvachim explains that, in fact, that's also only according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. According to Rabbi Shmuel and according to Rabbi Akiva, we can't be putting them all together because the Bechor is Zrika, and the other two, Maisa and Pesach, are actually Shvicha. The Rambam Paskins like the opinion that the Maaser and the Pesach require Shficha based on that Gemara at the end of our Masechta and a couple of other Gemaras that imply that only according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili is this the case, but the other Chachamim would all disagree with that. On the other hand, it's interesting that in the Seder Korban Pesach that we say on Erev Pesach, we use the words of our Mishnah, Zorka Zrika Achas, which on the face of it seems to be only like Rabbi Yossi Aglili and seems to not be correct al pi alocha. Maybe what it is one of the Meforshim on the Rambam explains that even the Rambam sometimes will use the word zrika in a general sense just to mean application of blood to the Mizbeach, even though elsewhere he'll clarify what kind of zrika we're talking about. So maybe the same thing over here. Maybe we use the word zrika in a generic sense, but really what we mean is that actually they do shvicha, as we're saying in the Gemara over here. Okay. It's interesting, by the way, in that connection, you know, there's an explanation in Shulchan Aruch. Why is it that we say this perek of Ezer Makoyman before davening? Why do we single it out among all the other prakim in Shas? And one reason is because there's no machloikas anywhere in it. So therefore, it's like halacha l'moshe m'sinai. It's all clear halachas as they were taught to Moshe Rabbeinu. But actually, from the Gemara there and from other Gemaras in that perek, we see that there are actually various details in those mishnayos, which there are machloikas in about. Rebbe didn't choose to put those machloikas in the Mishnah over there. He just left it as a stam Mishnah. But nevertheless, we have things like that, like whether the Maaser and the Pesach require shficha or zrika, where he left it open, kind of. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Yotzakat Rishona, B'cholo, the first group went out and the second group came in, and then the second left and the third group came in. And we said the third group was relatively small. So we said when they were saying Hallel, they never even reached as far as Ahavti Ki Yishma Hashem the first time because there were very few people over there. So the Gemara says, Tana, we learn in a Braisa, He Nikras Kat Atzlonis. That was called the lazy group. Because they were lazy and they only showed up at the end. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Baholi sagi delav hachi. After all, we said yesterday there has to be three groups, so you can't have otherwise. There has to be a third group. My havelahu lemevad. So what could they do? No matter what, there's going to have to be a third group. Why are we criticizing them as atzlonim, as lazy? The answer is afilohochi iboilohu lezaruzi nafshayu. Nevertheless, we can still say each individual person who winds up in that group could have been more zoriz and could have made an effect to be there earlier. Kedetanya, as in fact we learn in a braisa, we have a similar concept. Rebbe Omer, ef shela olam b'lay basim v'lay bursi. The world can't exist without perfumers and tanners, where perfumers have a very fragrant smell to them and tanners have a very disgusting smell from all the skins that they work with tanning. Nevertheless, Ashrei Misha Umunuse Basam, happy is the person whose job, whose parnasa is to be a spice, is to be a spice dealer. Oiloi Misha Umunuse Bursi, and woe to the person who ends up being a tanner. So in other words, yeah, there have to be tanners in the world, but you personally didn't necessarily have to be a tanner, an ochenve that you wound up with that. Similarly, he says, "V'ef shel olam b'lo schodim v'lo nekevis." The world can't exist without boys and girls. Ashrei misha bonav schodim. Happy is a person whose children are boys. Olam the misha bonav nekevis. And woe to a person whose children are daughters, because the Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that daughters are. About a person always has concerns about them that they're going to stay tzniastic and that they're going to be able to get married and then that they're going to be able to have children, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, daughters, the Gemara says, but they were always tend to be more of a worry for a person than sons. With that said, there is a Gleich Vertel on it that says, we're saying, Oilo the Misha Bonav Nekevis, woe to a person whose sons are daughters, meaning whose sons act like daughters and don't do what they're supposed to. Be that as it may, the point is, in other words, that the world needs different kinds of people. But nevertheless, you should make you try to make an effort to be in an earlier group rather than waiting for the third group. And therefore, if you're in the third group, then we can still call you part of Katatzlonis. Okay.
Isn't that a bit decreasing or limiting the role of Hashem and offensive to him? He created the world the way he saw.
That's true. Hashem created the world the way he saw. And that's what we're saying. The world needs these kind of people. But you personally, the fact that you ended up in this situation and you might have made different choices in the case of Basim and Bursi, a person can choose what kind of parnasa they have. So, okay, if they end up with the parnasa of a Bursi, okay, you know, fine, it's Ashgacha Pratis. Obviously, the Abishah wanted to be in them. Nevertheless, the fact is, we can still say, Oiloi, woe to him that he wound up in that kind of position. And the same thing with boys and girls. Ultimately, you don't control it. The Abishah controls it. But still, so the same thing about you. Yeah, you may end up in the Kat Shlishis, but still, maybe you could have taken steps. You could have taken proactive steps to avoid that. By the way, you know, we have something similar as far as the Makos and the punishment of the Mitzrayim. One of the well-known explanations about why is it, you know, the Eibishter said in advance, Geri Yezaracha Be'eretz Lo Lahem Ba'avodim Ve'inu Oisam, that they're going to afflict them. So why are the Mitzrayim being punished afterwards? So one explanation is, I think the Rambam's explanation is because yes, there was a gzeira that the Mitzrayim in general are going to afflict the Jewish people, but that didn't mean that any individual Mitzri was told min hashamayim that he has to be doing it. So therefore, so he gets punished for the fact that he chose to be among the oppressors rather than he could have been one of the good Mitzrayim who didn't. So similar to what we're saying over here. Even if there's a general exeter that there has to be a bursi, you don't necessarily have to be that, and so forth. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, k'maseo b'chol v'cholo, we said the same way as they brought the Korban Pesach on weekdays, the same procedure was done on Shabbos, because as we're going to say at the beginning of the next perek, the avoidus of the Korban Pesach and certain other things with the Korban Pesach that are essential to it can be done on, have to be done on Shabbos, whenever Pesach comes out on Shabbos, with the exception, we said in the Mishnah, that the Kohenim would wash the floor of the Azara, but that was Shaloi Bertzoin Chachamim, not with the consent of the Chachamim. So the question is, Shaloi Bertzoin Man, which Chachamim, which Tana, would it be that would be saying that they're not allowed to wash the floor on Shabbos? So Rav Chista says specifically we mean according to Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer would hold, as we're going to say now, that if a person sweeps a floor on Shabbos, or in this case washes a floor, then he's over on an Isur D'oraisa. So therefore we can't be matir it in the Beis Mikdash. You can be matir Melachas D'oraisa in the Beis Mikdash where they're necessary for the Korban, but washing the floor after the Korbanos are done is not necessary for the Korban. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer would say, you're not allowed to do it. And therefore, he would say, the Kohenim who did that are wrong for doing so. After all, if it was according to the Rabbanon, they would say that washing a floor on Shabbos is only an Isur D'Rabbanon, is only a Shavuos, the in Shavuos for Mikdash. And we have a general rule that D'Rabbanon don't, that Isurim D'Rabbanon don't apply in the Beis Mikdash. Maihi, so what are we talking about? Where is this machloikas Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Echod HaCholiv, whether a person milks an animal, v'hamachabetz, or he makes the milk into cheese. So Rashi over here describes that it means that he gets the milk into he puts the rennet into the milk to curdle it and make it cheese and then make it into blocks of cheese. Elsewhere in Shabbos, where we learned this also, Rashi explains a little bit differently that it means that he puts it in a net bag or something to allow the whey to drip away so it solidifies into cheese. Whatever it is, that process is called mechabetz. V'hamagabin. Or he actually makes the cheese. So okay, mechabetz means then that he puts in the rennet to make it curdle, and then megabin would be that he actually shapes it into a shape of cheese. Kigregeris. In all those cases, if he does a gregeris size of it, then already he's doing a malacha. And furthermore, hamachabed, if a person, now Rabbi Eliezer holds, the Gemara explains in Shabbos, that milking he holds is a tolda of mefarik, which in turn is a type of dosh, of threshing, because threshing involves that you remove the grain from its natural outer shell, in the same way he's removing the milk from its natural container, the animal's udder, so therefore he's chayev for that. Mechabetz, the curdling the cheese, he says would be an issue of boiler, because he's separating out the curds that are going to become the cheese from the whey that's going to drip away. And megabin, making it into a block of cheese, shaping it into a block of cheese, he says would be chayev on the grounds of boiner, of building. So all of those are malachas d'oraisa. And then he continues, hamachabed, a person who sweeps on Shabbos, v'hamerabetz, or he sprinkles water or some other kind of liquid in order to keep down the dust. V'haroi dechalis dvash, or if he takes honeycombs with honey in them out of a beehive on Shabbos. So all of those, b'shoigig, if he does, b'shoigig b'shabbos chayev chatos, all those things, if he does them on Shabbos b'shoigig, he's going to be chayev chatos because he was over on an issur d'oraisa. Hizid b'yomtiv loikas ha'aboyim, and if he does it b'mezid on yomtiv, then he's getting malchus. Divir Rabbi Eliezer, that's what Rabbi Eliezer says. By the way, why we're mentioning shogig on Shabbos versus mezid b'yomtiv is what one of the Mephoshim explains. Really, we would like to mention shogig throughout because it's much more common to be mechal Shabbos or yomtiv b'shogig than b'mezid. But by yomtiv, we can't say shogig because if he does b'shogig, nothing happens. There's no chatas to bring for breaking yomtiv. Therefore, by yomtiv, necessarily, it had to mention mezid. But by Shabbos, we stick to shogig because that's the more common case. Anyway, the point is, so again, the first three we said, what Rabbi Eliezer is Machayev for, as far as sweeping and laying down the dust, those, he says, the problem is that you're going to smooth out holes in the ground, so therefore it's a tolda of boina also, of building. And as far as taking honeycombs out of a, as far as taking honeycombs out of to taking honey out of a out of a out of a hive on honeycombs with honey out of a hive on Shabbos, the Gemara explains that that Rabbi Eliezer considers a beehive to be like a tree. He learns from a pasuk, "B'yaras hadvash," that a hive is like a tree, and therefore, just like if you pick a branch off a tree or pick a fruit off a tree on Shabbos, then a person is chayav for that. So the same way he would say taking honey out of a honeycomb. V'chamamim, the chum say echad zeh ve'echad zeh, both this and this eina elam mishum shavus is only aser as a dirabanan. So Rashi explains the echad zeh. Now in Shabbos, Rashi explained echad zeh ve'echad zeh meant both on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. Here Rashi explains it somewhat differently. When they say echad zeh ve'echad zeh, they mean the last three things. They agree that the first three are ovis, are told us of ovis malachos, and therefore he'd be chayev if he milks a cow on Shabbos or makes cheese or shapes cheese. They agree that he'd be chayev chatas for that. They disagree on the last three about the sweeping and the laying down the dust and the taking out the honey and the taking out honey from a hive on Shabbos, that they say those things are only also dirabanan. So according to the Chachamim, then sweeping is only also dirabanan. Therefore, it's not going to be chai. Therefore, it's not going to be also in the Beis Mikdash. So according to the Chachamim, there should be no problem with the Kohenim doing that on Shabbos in the Beis Mikdash. You have other different mafoshim talk about over here about different possibilities. Maybe even a number of rishonim say that no, the chachamim would say that even the first three things, even the milking and the making cheese, wouldn't be also daraisa, only dirabanan. Because, for example, in the case of milking, Tosfos discusses it over there in Shabbos, for example, that the milking maybe only we say that ein disha ela begidule karka. We say that the malacha of dosh and the related malachas that come out of it are only applied to things that grow from the ground, which therefore wouldn't apply to milk. And the same thing as far as the other ones. Tosfos over here gets into a bit of discussion that that Rabbi Eliezer says that Rabbi Eliezer would take the view that when a person is sweeping the floor, he definitely means to smooth out holes in the ground. So if we say malacha shein tzricha legufa, then he's chayev. Then therefore he's chayev because he is in fact smoothing out the holes in the ground. As opposed to, according to the Rabbanon, he only means to sweep. Incidentally, he may be filling in the holes, but it's not necessarily psik resha. So therefore, it's only an isur de Rabbanon. Tosfos also adds over here that even though the azara was a tiled floor, was a stone floor. Nevertheless, though, there are spaces between the rows where there's dirt over there, and therefore Rabbi Eliezer would still say that when you're sweeping, or in this case washing the floor, then you're causing holes in the you're meaning to cause holes in those spaces between the rows of stones to get filled in. Therefore, he would say that it's also daraisa. So therefore, according to him, the Chachamim are not allowed to wash the floor on Shabbos. And if they do, then the Chachamim don't like that. Whereas the other Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Eliezer would say that, no, it's only an Issur Dirabanan. Rav Ashi Yomer, Afilu Tema Shaloi Betzon Chachamim. Rav Ashi says you don't have to say that the Chachamim of our Mishnah who disapprove of the Kohenim means only Rabbi Eliezer. It could even be Afilu Tema Shaloi Betzon Chachamim. You could even say that it would go according to the Rabbanan of that bright, so who disagree with Rabbi Eliezer and say that it's only also Drabbanon, but we could say that Verabnasin, we could still say that it goes according to Rabnasin. The Tanya Rabnasin, Shvus Tzricha Hitiru, the Chachamim are only matter a Shvus in the Beis Mikdash, only where it's necessary for the Avoida, or not for the Avoida, but at least for the regular functioning of the Beis Mikdash. But if it's not as necessary for the functioning of the Beis Mikdash, then the Chachamim weren't necessarily matir it, even though it's only an Issur Drabanan. We talked about this a little bit at the end of Erevin in connection with certain Drabanans that we were matir there in the Beis Mikdash, that maybe we're not matir all Drabanans. So the same thing Rav Nosson would say over here. We're not just blanket saying that we can be matir all Shvusim. We're saying it depends how necessary it is, and the Chachamim didn't consider this to be that necessary. With that said, though, since the Gemara is implying over here that that's only according to Reb Nosson, the Rambam doesn't paskin that way. The Rambam paskins that in general in Shavuos b'Mikdash, and therefore the Chachamim therefore the Kohenim are allowed to wash the floor on Shabbos, and that is how we also say it in the Seder Kohen Pesach. We describe how after they finished and the floor is full of blood, then we say over there how they would wash the floor even on Shabbos. That's based on the Rambam's psak on this. We said in the Mishnah.
Is that because if you don't wash the blood on Shabbos, then it'll be permanent?
No, because even after Shabbos, it may be a little harder to wash off, but you'll still be able to. No, the reason is because it's still because ultimately we're saying over here, according to the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, it is only an Issur Dirabbanan. Now Rabbi Nosson is telling us that even Issurim Dirabbanan, it's not just a blanket statement that we're being matur all of them, but the implication is that other Chachamim would disagree with Reb Nosson and say that in general, Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash. So the Rambam follows that and says, okay, well, if Ein Shavuos B'Mikdash, then we don't have to worry about it. We're going to be allowed to be over on the Shavuos the Shavuos doesn't apply in the first place in this Mikdash in order to be able to get the floor clean. In Seder Korban Pesach, we use the expression Zehu Kvod HaBayis. This is the covered of the Bais Mikdash. The floor should be clean. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Oma Koisoyim Malav. We said Rabbi Yehuda would say, Rabbi Yehuda says that they would take, before they wash the floor, they would fill up a cup from all the blood that was spilled on the floor and throw it once against the Mizbeach. And then the Chachamim disagreed. So let's talk about that. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Oma Koisoyim Malav Midama Taruvis. They would fill up a cup of blood from the blood that was lying on the floor over there, that was all mixed together on the floor. She'im yishofik domei shal echad mehen, because this way, if the blood of one of the korbanos had spilled on the ground and now it never reached the mizbeach, nimtza ze machshirei, then it comes out. Now you'll be able to be machshir it. Because now you have in this cup, now in this cup, we can assume that a little bit of blood of that korban is mixed in. You have a concept, by the way, it's not so simple. The question is, when liquids mix, do they really mix that evenly so much that we can say that any cup or any drop of that liquid that you pick up contains molecules of all the other ones? The Gemara is assuming over here, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda, that yes. So we can assume no matter where in the Azara we picked up that blood from, there's going to be in it at least one molecule of the blood that from a korban where the blood spilled on the ground, and that's good enough. As long as that one molecule reaches the Mizbeach, then it's good enough. Now the Chachamim answered Rabbi Yehuda that, what do you mean? It wasn't received in a keli. And if it wasn't received in a keli, then it doesn't help. Then zrika doesn't help for it. Rashi refers to a Mishnah in Zvachim that says that if the blood poured out of the animal's neck onto the ground, then it's possible. Only if you caught it in a keli and then afterwards it spilled out of the keli, then it's kosher. So the Chachamim are saying it spilled out of the animal's neck. So the Gemara, of course, asks Mino Yadi, how do they know that? It's not like we know that particularly happened. Ela hachi ka'amri, they know. What they mean is not that it definitely happened. Shema lo niskabel b'kli. Maybe it wasn't received in a keli. So in other words, so if it's only for a suffix, then how do we make such a takana to throw it on the mizbeach when it may not have ever been received in a keli at all? So according to Rashi's preferred explanation is that the question is that it's not going to do any good. So what are you trying to accomplish with that? Rashi brings a second explanation, which he doesn't like as much, which is, he says, after all, it could conceivably be that all of this blood that you're collecting from the floor in this cup, maybe none of it was in a keli. The problem is not only then that you're not accomplishing anything good, the problem is then that you're sprinkling blood on the Mizbeach, which is possible, and you're not supposed to be doing that. So Rashi doesn't like that explanation, but Tosfos does. Tosfos says a very similar explanation, that after all, you're not allowed to put possible blood on the Mizbeach. So how are you now taking this cup of blood from the floor and throwing it against the Mizbeach in case there might be kosher blood in it? What if all of it is possible blood and you're not supposed to be putting possible blood on the Mizbeach? Omalahen. So he answers them, Afani, lo yamarti, ela ben eskabo bakli. As a matter of fact, I'm only talking about blood that was actually received in a keli. So obviously, again, the question is Mino Yoda. How does he know that this particular blood that we're picking up was received in a keli? Maybe Take it poured out of the neck onto the ground. The answer is Koyanim Zrizimhem, the Koyanim are Zoriz, the Koyanim are careful. So therefore, there's no concern that they didn't receive the blood because the Koyanim know what they're doing and they're going to make sure to receive the blood of the Korban. The question is Rizin Amai Mishtapich new? And if there's Zoriz, then how did it get spilled in the first place? The answer is Agav Zuz Risaihu to Avdi, because they're working so fast, they're passing the bowls back and forth to each other so fast, Mishtapich, it could happen sometimes that it spills. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda takes it as a given that yes, this blood that we're collecting from the floor at one point was in a Kli Shares, therefore it was kosher to sprinkle on the Mizbeach, but now when one Kohenim, when one Kohen was handing it to the next one, he fumbled it a little bit and some of it, and it spilled. And therefore, maybe no blood of that Kohen reached the Mizbeach. So therefore, putting this one cup full on the Mizbeach will accomplish that Kohen will be kosher. Okay. According to Rashi's second explanation, what the Gemara is saying is that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, well, you're right, we're going to have to make sure that we collect this one cup of blood from an area where we know that happened, where we know that one coin spilled blood out of a keli rather than from a place where it might be that it came out of the neck. Okay. So now the question is, okay, but you have to consider when you shecht an animal, you have those dam ha-nefesh, the actual gush of blood that the animal's life leaves it with. And then you have dam ha-tamsis, you have other blood that trickles, that oozes out before and after that. Now you have a lot of that as well. You have a lot of dam ha-tamsis on the floor as well. So Rashi explains, the question is, even if you were to say, so fine, you're going to say that all the dama nefesh was received in a keli, like Rabbi Yehuda says, but isn't it going to be bottle in this larger amount of dama tamsis that's on the floor over there? And dama tamsis is not kosher to be used for not kosher to be used for zrika. The answer is Rabbi Yehuda l'taimei. The answer is Rabbi Yehuda goes in that according to his own svara. Dama tamsis dam mal yehu. He says dama tamsis is considered full fledged blood, meaning any dama tamsis of chulin or of kodshim. So therefore, it's not going to be mevatel. The Tanya, as we learn in a brayse, dama tamsis bazhara. To a person eats or drinks dama tamsis, he's only over on a lav. Now, if a person eats the dama nefesh, then he's chayv. A person eats a kazayis of dama nefesh, he's chayv koris. The Torah tells us in a few places that eating blood is chayv koris, but that only applies to dama nefesh because the psukim in these places mentions the idea ki adam hu nefesh. So only the dama nefesh, only the gush of blood with which the animal's life goes out is what he's chayv koris for. The dama tamsis, just the blood that oozes out, would only be a lav according to the chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a behi kodis. Rabbi Yehuda says no, it's chayav kodis. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda holds that dama tamsis is considered blood just as much as dama nefesh. So therefore, so bapashtus then, Rabbi Yehuda would say that dama tamsis could also go on the mizbeach, and therefore it's not going to be mevato the dama nefesh. The problem with that is v'ha'amar b'lazer moedet. So the chachamim would disagree, and the chachamim would say that no, dama tamsis is not considered full-fledged dam. Therefore, it's going to be mevatel the dama nefesh, and therefore, even if you're going to argue that all the dama nefesh over here was in a keli, nevertheless, you're still going to have it's going to be bottle in the larger amount of dama tamsis. The problem with that explanation is v'ha'amar b'lazer moedet Rabbi Yehuda l'inin kapara she'enim achaper. Rabbi Yehuda, even though Rabbi Yehuda says that dama tamsis, the person is chayav kodesh for, he does agree as far as kapara, that as far as sprinkling on the mizbeach, that you can't use dama tamsis for that. Shenema ki adam hu banefesh yichaper, because the pasuk says the blood that's in the soul is mechaper, implying dam sha nefesh yotze by mechaper, only blood that the nefesh goes out with is mechaper, dam sha ina nefesh yotze by ina mechaper, and blood that the nefesh doesn't go out with, namely this dama tamsis. is not mechaper. So even Rabbi Yehuda, so fine. Rashi explains on Amud Aleph, you have many different psukim in different places that talk about the issu of dam. So Rabbi Yehuda holds one of those psukim teaches us that the issu of dam, the issu kodesh of dam, goes on dam atamsis as well. But even he agrees that you don't have such a limud as far as sprinkling it on the mizbeach. So you're back to the question, therefore, that the Dama Tamsis, there's more of it than there is Dama Nefesh, because again, it's likely that only a little bit of Dama Nefesh spilled on the floor. After all, we said Koinim Zrizim Haim, and therefore they catch the Dama Nefesh in the Keli to begin with. Even if one or two of them spill it, it's only a small amount compared to the amount of Dama Tamsis that comes out of all the Korbanos that are sprinkled. And you know, we said yesterday, for example, we had the example in Agrippas' times when they had 1.2 million Korbanos Psachim. So you're going to have a lot more Dama Tamsis from those than you're going to have from the few where maybe the Dama Nefesh was spilled. So won't it be Mavatal, even according to Rabbi Yehuda? The answer is Elo, Rabbi Yehuda L'taymei. No, rather we can answer that Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his Svara as far as a different halacha. De'oma ein dam Mavatal dam. Rabbi Yehuda says that blood is not Mavatal blood. So the context where Rabbi Yehuda says that, Rashi refers to, is a case in Zvachim where you have blood that got mixed with blood. First, you have a case where blood of a korban got mixed with water. So the question is whether you can still sprinkle it on the mizbeach. And the answer is, as long as it still looks like blood, then you can. Then you have, what if it got mixed in with the blood of a different animal, an animal of chulin, the blood of a wild animal which can't be brought on the mizbeach. So then what do you do? So the Chachamim say over there that you do the same thing. You figure out how much blood that doesn't go on the Mizbeach there is there versus how much blood that does go on the Mizbeach. Imagine as though it was a mixture of blood and water. Would it still be recognizable as blood? Then you can sprinkle it. If not, then not. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it doesn't matter. Ein dam mevatel dam. Blood is not mevatel blood. So the same thing over here. He's going to say that dama tamsis is not mevatel dama nefesh. The actual original context that Rabbi Yehuda learns it from, interesting, is in connection with the korbanos of Yom Kippur. We know at one point during the avodah of Yom Kippur, so you have, there's the blood of the par, of the par kohen gadol, that the kohen gadol brings into the kodesh hakodashim and into the kodesh and sprinkles it over there. Then you have the blood of the soyer lashem, where he does the same thing. Afterwards, it says he mixes the blood together and then applies them to the mizbeach hazahav. A par has a lot more blood than a soyer does. So wouldn't you have that minatoda, if things are bottle and rive, wouldn't you have then that the blood of the soyer is bottle in the much larger amount of blood of the par? So Rabbi Yehuda learns as a general concept from that he says, it min b'mino is not bottle. That when you have two, they're both blood, therefore one of them is not mevatel the other. The Chum disagree, and the Chum say in that particular case, there's a particular reason to say that it's not mevatel. Anyway, so the point is, again, returning to our Gemara, so Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that the Dama Tamsis, given that according to him, it's considered real blood, even as far as the Chiyuv Kares, then therefore therefore it's not going to be Mevatel, the little bit of Dama Nefesh that might be on the floor. So the Gemara continues, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Amar lahen Rabbi Yehuda l'chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda says to the Chachamim that you're telling me that you don't do this one cup of blood on the Mizbeach, l'divreichem, according to your own words, lama poikikin es azara, why do we know that before they started shechting the Korbanos on Erev Pesach, they would stop up the outflow from the azara? So you had, there was the... And we mentioned before, there's the Amma, there's the water channel that flowed through the Azara. And usually it's just flowing through. It has an inlet and an outlet, and usually it's just flowing through. Sometimes they would use it. They would use it. For example, you had blood that was possible to go on the mizbeach would be poured in there, and it would drain away, and so forth. But Rabbi Yehuda says on erev and at you chachamim agree that on erev Pesach before they started shechting the korbanos pesachim, they would stop. They would block up the outflow of it. So now, according to me, you understand why, because we want to make sure that the blood doesn't just drain away. We want that at the end. There should be blood on the floor over there that we can use for this purpose of sprinkling on the Mizbeach. But according to you, if we're not going to do that anyway, why do we bother stopping up the outlet? So the Chum answered him, Shevach ulivnei Aaron sheyerchu ad akubesehem badam. It's a praise for the children of Aaron, for the Kohenim, that they should be walking in blood up to their knees. Now, why is that? For a couple of reasons. First of all, it shows how much avoda they're doing, that you have so many korbanos were shechted and they're working so hard on it that you have enough blood to fill up the azara all the way up to their knees. So if you didn't, if the ama was open, then all the blood would drain away and you wouldn't have that. Another point is also some of the mafarshim say, is it shows that they themselves are willing to do the avoda even in such circumstances. Now, we had at the beginning of the previous perek on Dafnun Zion, we talked about, you know, we had Yisachar Ish Kfar Bar Kai over there, the Kohen Gadol, who used to put on gloves before he did the avoda because he didn't want to get his hands dirty with the avoda. So now the Kohenim are showing just the opposite. It's praiseworthy for them that they don't mind. They're walking, they're wading through blood up to their knees, and nevertheless, they have no problem with it, even though a person would naturally be disgusted by such a thing, but they're not, because it's all part of the avoda. So he says, that's why they would block the outlet, but nothing to do with the fact that later on we want to take some of this blood and sprinkle it on the mizbeach.
Up to knees, not a guzma.
Well, one second.
It's big and everything.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's a little bit. Well, it depends. I mean, when you have, for example, 1.2 million korbanos being shechted, then yeah, you may well have literally up to their knees. But okay, maybe it's a guzma. But still, the point is, you still have a lot of blood. Okay, but now the Gemara discusses. Let's talk about the halacha angles of it. Won't it be a problem if you have that much blood on the floor? It's going to be a chatzitza between their feet and the floor, and you can't do that. The answer is lachu ve'enechotzitz. That blood, it's moist, it's wet. Therefore, it's not a chatzitza. Kedetanya, as in fact we learned in a braisa about toveling in the mikveh, hadam, blood, v'hadyoy and ink, v'hacholov and milk, v'hadvash and honey. All of those yaveshim, if they're dry and they're on a person's skin or on a keli, chotzitzin, then they're a chatzitza. Lachen ein chotzitzin, but if they're moist, then they're not a chatzitza because the water will wash them away. So the same thing over here, the fact that the blood is moist, it's not really a chatzitza because his feet are still able to touch the floor. Okay. The question is, don't you have a different problem though? Their clothes are going to become dirty with the blood. If they're wading through it up to their knees, they're fine. Even if you say up to their knees is a little bit of a guzma, it definitely means that there's a certain amount of blood over there. It's a braisa. If the Kohen's clothes were dirty, v'avad, and he does the avoda, avodase psula, then his avoda is posel. So how can they allow their clothes to get dirty with blood? So you might answer, maybe what they do is they hitch up their clothing. So it's far above the ground. Can't be. V'hatanya, we learn in another braisa that when the pasuk says midoy bad, the pasuk says that the kohen should wear midoy, his clothing made out of linen, and the word midoy means kimidosoy, means exactly his size. Shelo yechsa v'lo yoser, it can't be too short and it can't be too long. So it has to be, Rashi says it has to be shava la'aretz, exactly down to the ground. So they would fit it exactly to the Kohen's height so that it exactly touches the floor when he's walking. The Rambam learns a little differently. He says that it was above the heel. Okay, but still, that's well below the knee. So fine, even if you say that up to the knees is a little bit of a guzma, still you have the bottom edge of it is only down until right above his heels. So therefore you have the bottom part of it is going to become dirty. And we're saying over here that if he hitches it up, then it's going to be no good. Now, actually, the Gemara discusses in Zvachim over there that there is a difference. If the clothes to begin with are too short or too long, then the avoda is possible. On the other hand, if the clothes are the right size, but then like he hitches it up using the avnate, then we're b'dievet, it's kosher. But still, we're not going to assume that they did b'dievet over here to keep their clothes from getting dirty. L'chatchila, they should be wearing the clothes properly so that they reach down to the level they're supposed to. So the answer is, when are we talking about that they would wade through the blood? When they're carrying the limbs, or in this case, the emurim of the korbanos to the ramp of the mizbeach, the lav avodahi, that's not considered an avoda. So therefore, at that point, they could hitch up the ksonis as they're walking on the floor over there to make sure that it doesn't get dirty. Now, the Gemara is going to ask soon, so what do they do as far as other avodas? We'll get back to that in a minute. But at least there was some avoda when they could literally be walking in the blood up until their knees without getting the clothes dirty, because at that point, they're not doing an avoda anyway, and therefore they could hitch up the clothes. So the problem with that is, what do you mean halacha sevoron lakevish? V'loy, you're telling me that's not an avoda. V'ha midaboy kahuna. Since we see that carrying the evorim, or in this case the emurim, to the ramp of the mizbeach, since we know that they have to be wearing bigde kahuna for it, therefore necessarily avodahi. That means necessarily it has to be an avoda. And we know they have to wear big dekohon at the Tanya, because we learn in a Braisa that when the Pasuk says Vehikru v'koyin es ha-koyin la-mizbecha, the Koyin should offer everything onto the Mizbeach. Zu ha-lochas evorim la-kevesh. This refers to carrying the Evorim to the ramp of the Mizbeach. And then in the case of the Korban Tamid, they would leave them on the ramp for a little while, and then they would bring them up to the top of the Mizbeach and throw them in. In the case of other Korbanos, I'm not sure if they did the same thing. Whatever the case, the point is that that is considered an avoda, because we see that it's considered an avoda, and the Pasuk mentions that they have to be wearing big dekona for it. So obviously, therefore, if we're going to have a problem with them hitching up the ksonas when it comes to other avodas, then the same thing would be true as far as this. So no, ela b'halachas eitzim l'ma'aracha. Rather, we can answer that they could hitch up the clothing, they could hitch up the ksonas when they're carrying wood to put on the wood pile on the mizbeach. That lav avodahi, that's not considered an avodah. You have the avodah, they set up the wood pile in the morning, and then in the morning also they put shnei gizrei eitzim on it, and then in the afternoon another shnei gizrei eitzim. But there are different times during the day when they have to add more wood to keep the fire going. That's not considered an avodah. So at that point, they could hitch up their ksonas and literally walk through the blood up to their knees. Okay, so the question is, nu. So how does that explain what they do when they are carrying the emurim to the ramp of the mizbeach, and when they're walking the blood over to sprinkle it on the mizbeach? Those have to be done in big dekohona, like we just said, and therefore the big dekohona have to reach the floor or above their heels, as the case may be. So what do they do about the blood then? The answer is demaski aitztvi. What they would do for those things, they would walk on stone platforms that are built into the floor. So they had in different places on the floor over there, you had stone platform. They had to be stone because you're not allowed to build any exposed wood in the Bais Hamikdash. So they had stone platforms built into the floor. And since they're built into the floor, then it's still considered the floor. So standing on them is not a chatzitza. And they were raised up a few inches or whatever above the level of the rest of the floor. So therefore the Kohenim could walk on those. So the floor, the most of the floor is flat, and therefore you have, that's where the blood is going higher and higher all the way up to knee level or close to it. Meanwhile, you have these platforms that are sticking out here and there from it that were built into the floor where they could walk along those, like little walkways, like little catwalks in the middle over there, that they could walk on those while they're doing actual avodas that require big dekohona. So then they could let their big dekohona hang down loose without it being a problem. Then when it comes to halachas eitzim, when it comes to that they're carrying wood for the ma'aracha, which is not an avoda, then they would hitch up their clothing and actually wade through the blood to show that they don't mind it. It's interesting, by the way, that description from that Roman consul in Shevet Yehuda that I mentioned yesterday, he describes, in his description, he mentions that the Kohenim wore red uniforms, which, what do you mean? I mean, we know the uniforms of the Kohenim, we know the Bigdei Kohuna were white. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says maybe he's referring to the Avnate specifically, where you have those Machlokas in Yuma and in a few other places in Shas, whether the Kohenim had Yotim wore an Avnate that was made only out of linen and was white, or whether they wore one that was multicolored, made from Tchelus, Vargaman, etc. So this Goy watching from a distance, maybe he thought it looked red. But I guess another possibility, based on our Gemara over here, there was so much red on the floor in the Bais Hamikdash that maybe he imagined that he saw that their clothing was red also, but really it wasn't, really it was white. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Ketzad Tolan Mafshit in Chula, we said that, we described how they hung up the Korban Pesach and skinned it. We said they had hooks over there on the walls and on the pillars, so you'd hang it from the hooks, and if you didn't have any hooks available, then you'd use sticks. And then Rabbi Eliezer says on Shabbos, you can't use the sticks because they're muktzah, so instead you'd hang it from your arm. And then eventually we said in the Mishnah, Kroy Votzio Semurov, they would rip or they would tear open after they skin the Korban Pesach, They would cut it open. They would take out the emurim that have to be offered on the mizbeach, nesanim b'magis, and then they would put them in a bowl, or they would put them in a bowl, lehaktiram, in order to, Rabbi Akiva Eger says it's supposed to be vihiktiram, and he was machtir them. So the question is, now all the parts until now, the skinning was done by the owner of the korban. The opening it up and taking out the emurim is also done by the owner of the korban. So what are you saying all of a sudden, vihiktiran, that he is makter them? What do you mean? Otu hu gufei have a makter lahu? What do you mean? Does he himself burn them on the mizbeach? The owner of the korban is not necessarily a kohen. He might well be a Levi or Yisrael. So, in fact, Rashi says, when we talk about skinning it, Bepashtus, we're not talking about koyanim, because when we said that they're skinning it, the koyanim don't have to do it. The koyanim don't have, even when it comes to an oila, where you have to skin it, then it's kosher for a zor to do it. How much more so over here, where there's no chiyuv daraisa to skin the animal anyway. They're just doing it for practical reasons in order to be able to get out the emurim and later on because they need to roast it. So definitely it's not an avoida that koyanim have to do. So Bepashtus, Levim and Yisraelim are doing it. So why are we saying Vihiktiram and he offered them on the Mizbeach? He's not the one who offers them. The answer is Ema Lihaktiran Agami Mizbeach. You're right. What the Mishnah means, they put them in a bowl to be offered on the Mizbeach. Not that the Yisrael himself would do it, but then he would give the bowl to the Kohen and the Kohen would come and take it and burn it on the Mizbeach. Rashi brings a second explanation. Rashi brings a different girsa that the Gemara's question is that what are we saying that they put him in a bowl and were makriv them, implying as if they were makriv them in a bowl. So Rashi says, I don't like that explanation because it's very common for the Gemara to use the expression that you put something in a kli shoris and burn it. And obviously we don't mean you burn it in the kli shoris, we mean you take it out. But that so therefore the Gemara wouldn't have had to bother asking that question in the first place. On the other hand, Tosfos says that the question could be that after all, how do you offer them in the kli shoris as is? You have to salt them first. So the answer is that no, it means you put them in a bowl, you put salt on them, and then you offer it on the mizbeach. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Yotza Katri Shoyna B'chola, we said that on Shabbos, they couldn't walk home with their Korbanos Pesach. So therefore, we said the first group would go out to the Harabayas and wait there. The second group would wait in the Chael, which is the area around the Azara, or in front of the Azara, which had it had a higher level of Kedusha. Goyim are not allowed to go in there. Tmei Mes are not allowed to go in there. So they would wait in that area. And then the third group would wait inside the Azara. We said they were standing. We said yesterday, Rabbi Akiva Eger points out that they're not able to sit inside the Azara. So therefore, necessarily, they had to stand. And then we said once Shabbos was over, then they would leave and go and start roasting their Korbanos Pesach. So Tana, we learn in a Braisa, kol echad ve'echad noisin pischei ba'oroi. Each person, when they're going home, would put their Korban Pesach inside its skin, umaf shalachorav, and then sling it behind him. Now, we actually learned in Masechta Shabbos, we had a machlokes, whether when Erev Pesach is on Shabbos, whether they would skin the whole animal or not. We had a Tana over there, I think Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan Breuker, who said that you don't, because you don't need to skin the whole thing. All you need to do is skin it until past the chest so that you can open up the animal and take out the emurim without wool from the animal getting stuck to them. So therefore, according to him, there's no putting them inside the skin because the rest of the animal is still inside the skin. It wasn't stripped off yet. But according to the Chachamim over there that you strip off the whole skin, then we're saying now they take the skin, they put the meat of the Korban Pesach inside it and they sling it over their shoulder and go home. Amar Rav Ilish Tayos, Rav Ilish, it was the name of an Amora, says they would do like the way Arab merchants do, where they sling their, where they would do like the way Arab merchants do, slinging what they're carrying, their merchandise or whatever behind their back. Now, what's the point of mentioning this? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden explains that what Rav Ilish wants us to know is, even though it seems like a very undignified way of doing it, so you would think a person should have a little more self-respect, but no, since we're dealing with a korban over here, then Adrabah, it shows respect for the korban that he's going to carry it, even though he himself is carrying it in a way that where it seems to be undignified, rather than giving it to somebody else to carry for him, let's say. The Or Sameach talks about a different angle on it. There's a concept we learned earlier in the Masechta and Daf Lamed Gimel Lamed Dalet. We talked about a concept called Hesech Hadas Pasels Kodshim. That if you have meat of Kodshim, and you don't pay attention to it, and therefore you don't know whether it might have become tameh or not, then it becomes possible to eat. Now, wouldn't it be then if he's carrying it behind his back, he can't actually watch it as he's carrying it? So shouldn't it become possible on the grounds of Hesech Hadas? So he says that's why the Gemara makes a point of mentioning that they put it inside the skin. The raw skin of the animal is not able to be makabel tuma because it can only be makabel tuma once you start tanning it. So therefore, they put it inside the skin, which therefore protects it from becoming tamei, and therefore, even though carrying it behind their back, then there's no problem of hesach hadas. I think the Dvar Shmuel explains a little bit differently. He says the vort is that usually, yes, we would say you have to carry it in front of you, but Rav Ilish is pointing out the same way as Arab merchants carry their merchandise behind them and they consider that a normal, safe way of carrying it, the same way over here, you can carry the Korban Pesach behind you and it's not considered Hesach Hadas. We're not going to insist that you have to dafka carry it in front of you. Hadron Alach Tamid Nishrat. I think maybe let's start the Mishnah. It's a bit of a long Mishnah anyway, and then we'll continue it. We'll continue it tomorrow. We have time anyway. So the Mishnah says, Eilu dvorim ba-Pesach doichen es ha-Shabbos. The following things, the following activities involving the Korban Pesach are doichen Shabbos, as we're going to learn in the Gemara how we know. Shchitasai, the actual shchita of the Korban Pesach, uzrikas domai, sprinkling the blood. Now Rashi makes a point of saying that these things can only be done by day because korbanos can only be brought by day. The point is, in other words, Rashi wants us to realize you shouldn't think that maybe you have to wait till Motzei Shabbos to do it, or at least we would say fine, the shchita, the pasuk says, has to be bein ha'abayim, but the zrika maybe you could have thought could be done by night. No, in general, we have by korbanos, the avoidus of them cannot be done at night. What would be the problem with Zrika anyway that we would say that it's not Doicha Shabbos? So Tosfos just says there's nothing. We're just meant once we're mentioning the Shchita, then we're mentioning the Zrika as well. But in fact, it's not as though if they did the Zrika, it's not as though the Zrika would actually involve any Issur of Shabbos. On the other hand, there are different Rishonim and we'll talk about that there might be. One thing is that maybe because Zrika, doing the Zrika makes the korban kosher to eat. So in effect, it's like Masakin, so at least it might be an Issur Dirabanan of making that now the meat of the korban is able to be eaten, whereas before it wasn't. So therefore, it might be an Issur Dirabanan of Masakin. Or different other possibilities they talk about why Zrika might be Osir. So therefore, the point is the Mishnah is telling us it's not. You do it on Shabbos because it has to be done that day. Another thing is Umichui Krovav, also cleaning out the kishkas of the animal, as we'll see in the Gemara. The problem is, if you leave them after Shabbos, they may spoil, and that would be bizoyan to the korban. So therefore, you can do that on Shabbos. Bahaktoras chalavav, and also burning the fat of the korban, the fat, the imurim, all of that can be done on Shabbos. Aval tzliyosay, but roasting the korban pesach, bahadochas krovav, and washing out the kishkis, ein and doichenes Shabbos. Those are not doicha Shabbos because those can be done after Shabbos. So michui krovav, actually, the Gemara is going to explain, means that they would take out the waste that's inside them. So that they can do on Shabbos, but to actually wash them, that could wait till after Shabbos. They're not going to spoil because they weren't washed. Also, continues the Mishnah, how kavosai, carrying the Korban Pesach. So let's say you have it's a sheep under a year old. It may not be old enough to be able to walk that easily, especially when there are crowds of people. So therefore, you want to carry it. Now, it's only an Issur D'Rabbanan, Rashi explains, because you have a concept we learned in Masechet Shabbos called Chai Noses Atzmai, that a living creature carries itself. Nevertheless, we still say that you can't do it on Shabbos because you could have done it before Shabbos. Actually, the Gemara in Shabbos mentions over there that it's a machloikas, actually, whether Chai Noseh Tzatzmei applies to animals or not. So there is an opinion over there that it doesn't, and therefore that it would be an Issur D'Oraisa. Whatever the case, our Mishnah is saying, even according to the opinion that it's an Issur D'Rabbanan, nevertheless, we're not doiched when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbos, because you could have just as well brought the animal before Shabbos. You didn't have to bring it there on Shabbos. Also, Also bringing it from outside the tchum, same idea, even though tchum is only drabanan, according to most tanoim. Nevertheless, you still could have brought it from outside the tchum before Shabbos, so therefore you don't have a heter to do it on Shabbos. Or cutting off a wart from it, where Rashi explains, if you bite it off or you take it off with your fingernails, then it's only an isu drabanan, as we learned at the end of Eruvin. Nevertheless, you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, because again, you could have done it. Ein doicha nes Shabbos. Those things are not doicha Shabbos, because you could have done them before Shabbos. The result, by the way, is going to be, if we're saying they're not doicha Shabbos, so let's say, for example, that you need to get your animal to the Bais HaMikdash and it's not going, and the only way would be to carry it, and we're saying you're not allowed to carry it on Shabbos. Okay, then you can't bring a Korban Pesach. Then you have to bring Pesach Sheni instead. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer Omer Doichin. Rabbi Eliezer says even these things that could have been done before Shabbos, because they're essential to the Korban, you can't bring the Korban if it's not there in the Bais HaMikdash. You can't bring the Korban if it has a wart on it. Therefore, Doichin. Therefore, he says even these things are Doicha Shabbos. This is, by the way, a general machloikus that you have in a number of places in Shas, where Rabbi Eliezer says that Machshirei Mitzvah are Doicha Shabbos, even if they could have done before, even if they could have been done before Shabbos. We learned about it in Masechta Shabbos as far as Bris Milah, for example, where the Chachamim said that if you don't have a knife then there before Shabbos, then you can't do the Milah. You just have to postpone it till after Shabbos. But Rabbi Eliezer had said not only you could bring a knife through to Shasarabim, you could even make a knife if you need to on Shabbos if you don't have one. So the same thing, Rabbi Eliezer over here says that these things are Doicha Shabbos. Amar Rabbi Eliezer v'haloi dinhu. So Rabbi Eliezer says, I can prove it with a Kavu Chomer. The actual shchita, which is definitely a malacha d'oraisa, it's one of the 39 malachas, and that is doiches Shabbos, when Erev Pesach is Shabbos. Elu, these three things that you're talking about, carrying it through the Shasarabim, or bringing it from outside the tchum, or biting off the wart, shehein mishum shvus, they're only an isur d'rabbanan, lo yidchu es Shabbos. Should those things not be doiches Shabbos? So Rabbi Yeshua answers him, I can disprove you based on considering what happens on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, there are certain malachas that are mutter, malachas oichel nefesh, and yet, yet you're not allowed to take things from outside the tchum on Yom Tov, because you could have done it yesterday, even though tchum and rabbanon. So just because you see that things d'oraisa are mutter doesn't show that things d'rabbanon are necessarily mutter as well. What kind of a proof is that? What kind of a proof is there between you're trying to bring a proof from a reshus? You don't have to eat this thing on Yom Tov. You want to eat it. So you're talking about whether you can bring it from outside the tchum, and the answer is you can. Here you're talking about a mitzvah of Korban Pesach. That's a whole different ballgame. So therefore, so we should say that yes, Shavuos is also Doicha Shabbos, and that Shabbos rather is Doicha Shavuos, and that the mitzvah of bringing the Korban Pesach is Doicha the Shavuos, and you should be able to carry it from outside the tchum or bite off the wart, etc., in order to be able to accomplish the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. You're bringing a proof from the fact that you can't bring something from outside the tchum, but that's only where you have a choice in the matter. But here, you don't have a choice. You have to bring a Korban Pesach. Okay, so we'll continue with the rest of the argument. We'll continue with the rest of the argument tomorrow, Bez Hashem. But so far, that's where we're standing, is that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that even things that could have been done before Shabbos, if they're necessary for the Korban Pesach to be brought, then they're Doicha Shabbos. And so far, we have Rabbi Yeshua is disagreeing.
Yeshikoyach.